Welcome back, everyone, to Merge Conflict, your weekly developer podcast. If I sound deeply under the weather, it's because I am still negative twice on the COVIDs that maybe expired 5 years ago, the test, who knows? But I'm here, Frank. It's happening. We were supposed to record yesterday when I felt better, but now I feel worse and it's death. I have my water. It's going good, Frank.
Negative on the COVID test is good. But the weather is above you. You're negative under the weather. That's bad. I don't like the two negatives are different here. English is dumb.
It could be, you know, I've been away. We saw each other in person, Frank, at the MVP summit. Now I left on Wednesday and today's Sunday. So I feel like there's a long distance between when I got sick and where that. So I'm not sure if that was it, but the weather's been so crazy up and down. You know what I mean? Like it was 75 degrees here today. And it was just like in the 30s last week.
Yeah, I feel like I'm supposed to be doing yard work now. I'm hoping to dodge a big bullet because my neighbors have COVID and you've gotten whatever you've gotten.
Something.
And so I'm just going to like stay in my computer chair, put on the vision, live in VR for a little while, and let all you humans keep getting sick around me. That's not true. I was sick a couple weeks ago. I let the curve.
Goes. And we saw each other. People don't know the Microsoft MVP Summit is a yearly summit on campus for the Microsoft most valuable professionals. And you are one, Frank, but you weren't in time to get registered. So I had to sneak you in to the summit.
No, there was no sneaking. Jobs are on the line. There was no sneaking happening. I went to the after parties. That's always where the fun stuff is.
Anyway, those don't count.
Yeah. Talk to people in the parking lot. That's what you do. I had a good time. Thanks to my inability to do paperwork, I couldn't physically attend the conference. I had to virtually attend the conference. And by that, I've done a poor job because I'm usually a couple weeks behind on conferences. I got a lot of videos to watch. There's always a lot of videos to watch. So my virtual attendance will be time delayed.
Yeah. I think that it was fun seeing you in person. Frank crashed my hotel and brought a bottle of wine, brought some virtual spatial reality over with his Vision Pro, and I slept on the pull-out couch. How was that pull-out couch for you there, Frank?
You know, I was scared because I think the last pull-out couch I slept on like permanently injured me. I think I'm still feeling the effects of it. And yet, the one provided by you, James, a wonderful couch, it was fine.
I think that
all
we
good.
Got,
Thank
I
you.
Think I think we got lucky, and I think we're in one of the updated rooms at the luxurious Marriott Fairfield, $100 a night. But I do think it was I don't know if it was just a more because they're always refreshing rooms. But I swear that couch looked newer, in my opinion. Sometimes you go to hotels and you're like, "Oh, this couch has been here since it's opened." You know what I mean? So I thought it was good.
Well, the mattress was bright white. That's all I cared about.
All we care about. No, I got to try the Vision Pro. So I figured we start off with a very short, what did James think? And I want Frank to predict.
I'm scared.
So Frank, what's your prediction? What did I think?
Okay. I actually don't need to predict much because you're very good at verbalizing. You told me exactly what you think. Let's see how much I can actually remember. I don't think you were overly impressed with the pass-through. I think, I don't remember exactly your complaints, but probably along the same lines as mine. It needs to be twice the resolution, four times the resolution, five times the resolution, and it needs to update even faster. I think you were bored by my apps, which is sad. I need to make my apps more entertaining. And I don't think you got to play with enough dinosaurs. I don't know anyone who's gotten past dinosaur number 3 in the dinosaur thing that I never play. How was that for the James review?
I think fairly accurate. You know, putting it on for the first time, we had the back strap. It was quite heavy, but I think I kind of knew that was coming. I think we struggled figuring out guest mode and figure out the right way to re-coordinate things. I did think that the eye calibration was probably my favorite part in a weird way. It did show me the eye tracking capabilities. So if people don't know, when you put on the Vision Pro, basically there's a bunch of balls like in a circle and you look at them and then you tap with your finger to confirm it. So it's tracking them and it lights them up and you kind of go in order. So it's sort of dialing in your pupils or your thing, your vision in the Vision OS. And that was probably my favorite part, to be honest with you. I think I just needed more time with it, to be honest. I don't know if it was a room or if it was something else. But it was quite fuzzy. But then obviously the experiences of the apps were very crisp, right? And I think that's intentional. So it's just something I get used to over time. I do think that was it. It was like we were just kind of there, kind of playing around. I think the problem with the Vision Pro right now is like the amount of apps that are there. Like I do think we tried the night sky app, the astronomy app. That was cool, but it's like, all right, I had to look up and it was kind of quite heavy on my head, you know? So that was kind of out there. My favorite app was actually your app. I actually think that was probably my favorite app because I actually got to move around and explore a little bit of the room. This is the Vision Night Vision Goggle application.
Thank you.
It was very good. And
trademark copyright.
I would buy that app. And I think it makes a good tech demo of like what's capable. Like, is it perfect? No, because it's like, it's also night and like all the different things, but like I could navigate a room. We made the room basically almost pitch black. And it was like really kind of cool to experience it and move around compared to the other built-in apps. But I think the thing that you liked about the Vision Pro was the productivity and the Mac and all this stuff. So obviously I didn't do that. Do I think I'm going to spend $3,500 on it right now? No, but I'm also not like a real early adopter. I'm not an AR, VR, MR at all, right? I've only put on a few headsets in my life. So I'm not in that world, right? So it's not really a device for me, but I do think that V2, if it's lighter, tighter, more apps are out, maybe that's the jam at the end of the day.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, I'm definitely with you on the lighter V2. I don't mind the weight, I guess, as much as everyone else, but definitely after a long day of VR, 8 hours in VR, I definitely feel it. I was wearing it for probably 4 to 6 hours before this show, and I'm not even sure if I have goggle face or not, but there's definitely some pressure on your face when it's on. And yeah, imagining 10 years down the road when there's half as much pressure on your face, that'd yeah. be wonderful. But I'm still sold on living in the 3D world. It's way better than the real 3D world.
I'm glad you're still into it. It's been a few weeks. I think the biggest surprise for me before we change topics was actually the battery pack. Very heavy, just a very heavy battery pack. And I didn't trip over it, but I kind of stumbled over it a little bit because I wasn't expecting it. So I hope that they tighten that up in the next future rounds.
You always have to have pockets. You can't wear pants with no pockets. No. Otherwise, you can't VR, I guess.
None of my pants have pockets. So that's my problem. Zero pockets ever. Zero pockets. That's how I live my life. All right. Well, let's get into our main topic. Before we do, we have a special Merge Conflict exclusive. Frank has no idea. So we don't do sponsors this year. As we've mentioned, we only do Patreons. However, our good friend Nick Chapsis, over at Dometrain, that's his .NET courseware, all sorts of stuff that you can go learn, experts in .NET doing all sorts of different things. Nick reached out and he's like, hey, I love your podcast, Merge Conflict, my favorite podcast besides my own. I was like, whoa, Nick, that's so cool of you to be like, wow, Merge Conflict, your favorite podcast. Thanks for the rep. And then he said, hey, we just launched some brand new .NET MAUI training from Brandon Minnick. He used to work over at Microsoft and worked with me at Xamarin for a long time, now over at AWS. And he does .NET on AWS, which is super cool. And longtime .NET Xamarin developer, .NET MAUI developer, just released.
Should get the friend of the show bell there. Yeah, ding. For Brandon.
Yeah. he just came out with a 5-hour getting started with .NET MAUI live interactive training and a deep dive going super deep into like unit testing, cross-platform services, GraphQL integration, async await stuff, memory management, all sorts of good stuff. And Nick is giving 20% off, Nick and team, 20% off on either of the courses that if you're interested in going and getting them. The first 50 people to redeem the code MERGECONFLICT20, all one word, MERGECONFLICT20, head over to Dometrain, D-O-M-E, train, like a train.com. I don't actually know what Dometrain means at all. I don't know. Nick is going to have to let me know. It's not a .NET thing, but I don't know what it is.
Is it Dom or Dome? Spell again, please.
D-O-M-E, train. One word, though.
D-O-M-E, train.
When you hear Nick, is like, go to dometrain.com. But he says it in his accent, so I can't really figure it out. But anyways,
okay.
Go to dometrain.com. There's a link in the show notes below. Merge Conflict 20, 20% off. Thanks to Nick for hooking up listeners of the show. We made zero money off of that. There is zero money that is coming our way at all. I said, this. Let's just give back to the community and go from there. So thanks, Nick, for hooking that up. Now let's talk about something though. MVPs. I'm not an MVP, although I did have my MVP plaque somewhere around here. I mean, I got the 5-year plaque down there.
They let you in.
Something sneaked out. It's very sneaky over there. People were sneaking. I don't really know if I should talk about this because this was shown at the MVP summit, but it's a public GitHub repo. And I know Steve Sanderson's going to be talking about that, doing some, maybe everything's out by the time we talk about it. No one listens to our podcast anyways, but I want to talk about AI, Frank.
You want to talk about AI. Remember for years, I could never get you to talk about AI. And now it's all we talk about. James, why do you want to talk about AI and why the sudden shift?
That's because you want to keep talking about machine learning. And I don't want to talk about machine learning ever. That seems terrible. I'm not a machine learning a person, but I'll sprinkle. Like, here's James in a nutshell. Sick James, mm-hmm. raspy voice in a nutshell. Okay, I'm a front end developer, right? I'm like high level. Yeah, I can get down into architecture, I can get down into service, I can do this stuff. But that's my jam, right? Yeah. I am not really about writing and figuring out kernels and semantics and AIs and open AIs and Azure open AIs and DALIs and all this stuff. What I want, Frank, is I want the easy button, the dot do it. You know, when you go into Visual Studio, just writing code and it's just like IntelliSense and Copilot's like blah, and IntelliCode's like writing your code for you. That's what I want. But for AI, there's an experiment over at github.com/.NET-smart-components. And I like to think of this as, you know, a cupcake. Have you ever eaten a cupcake? Do you know a cupcake or a donut?
I've indulged once or twice in my life in a cupcake and a donut.
So you have a cupcake and you bake the cupcake cake part, and then you put the frosting on it. Now, as we all know, this is the core foundation of AI. Is the core foundation underneath.
Are you breathing, James? Breathing. Okay. Get this metaphor through.
The core foundation is the cake. The semantic kernels and the stuff are the frosting.
Okay.
But really what you want is just the sprinkles on top. That's really what you want. You just want sprinkles on top. You just want sprinkles.
Are those icons? Okay.
But what you think about like this is you have your app and you have all this stuff. And that's the base. And you have a whole sheet. You have a whole sheet of delicious keto, low carb muffins, cupcakes. They're not muffins, they're cupcakes. Woo. Yeah, I'm getting foggy. You sprinkle AI on it. And that's what this is, Frank. It lets you add AI powered features to your Blazor, MVC, and Razor Pages applications quickly and easily without having to know anything about AI, avoiding the risk of wasted effort and experimentation. And there's a bunch of just controls that have AI built into them.
Good old,
and this blew my mind.
Good old controls. I mean, when I think .NET, I think, sadly, weirdly, Visual Basic and C# WinForms and controls. I just want to put a control in my app. So can I summarize your weird cupcake sheet metaphor as you want the AI features, but you don't really want to do anything. You just want to click the checkbox that says, yes, add AI feature to my app. And I think that that's what you found here, James, in this open source library. Once again, .NET-smart-components/smart-components.
Yeah.
I love it because it really is that simple. We'll talk about which components it is. But yeah, I get way down into the weeds too much. I prefer to think of myself as a UI developer, but obviously I spend way too much time not working on UIs. And this is just a lovely little library that lets you add a little bit of sprinkles. Is that the metaphor?
Sprinkles.
Your app. Sprinkle some AI on your apps. And cool. I'm down for an app, a library like that.
That's all I ever wanted. You know, I think that what this enables folks to do is go deeper if they want to. But hey, what is something that every developer could benefit from today? Not everyone needs an entire chatbot, entire thing. So what are these things? Well, there's a few things, Frank.
Put a chatbot in. We don't need chatbot pop-ups on every website. Please don't put chatbot pop-ups on every website. I get your intention. We don't need to do it. Please don't do it.
Got to do it. All right. So the first one is Smart Paste. This is a button that will automatically fill out forms using data from the clipboard. So you got first name, last name fields, you got addresses, city, zip codes, and it'll figure that out for you. The model knows. ChatGPT knows. I'll figure it out.
Okay. I love this. This is a fantastic feature because how many forms do I fill out every day? 8 million. Run a company in the United States. You fill out 8 million web forms every day. Mm-hmm. And the Safari autocomplete is wonderful, except it only works about 10% of the time. And I blame the websites. They are oddly coded. And so the autofill doesn't always work on them. So I love this thing that kind of that just does all that for you, no matter the browser, and hopefully no matter your data set. I am a little bit nervous that it is an opt-in feature. Someone smart enough to have advanced clipboard features like this, I think, are still going to fill in their autofill stuff nicely. Mm-hmm. But it's a good control. It's a weird one to start with, but smart paced, turning text into structured data. Smart paced. I can smart paced.
I'm in. I think this is really cool just because, like you said, we've all filled out forms a bajillion times. Now, like you said, it's different. Like if Edge or Chrome or whatever are auto-filling it out, the difference here is data entry, right? And to me, there's a lot of applications, I don't know if you know, Frank, that are basically just data entry over and over and over again. And what I like here is that the demo that they show off is that the data isn't like perfect. Actually, they show sort of an email that has a bunch of information in different order going. So actually, like, It's here's my address, and then also here's my phone number, and then also thanks so much, here's my name, and it figures that out. So it's not like a perfect first name, last name, you know, address, blah, blah, blah. Like, it's actually a little bit more of a complex demo, which is kind of cool in that regard. So I really like that in general. So it's pretty neat.
This seems like just kind of a no-brainer. If you have a form, put this on it.
Boom.
You're just saving people time.
And the next one up is probably one of my favorite things about pretty much every product I use, Frank, which is autocomplete. Like, you know, do you not want to just autocomplete? Like when you're typing an email, you know, you're coding, like you're writing a sentence and then it completes it for you and you just tab. Do you ever do this? Do you turn that off? Or you're like, hey, computer, don't you dare write stuff for me. You're not going to inject.
All I want the computer to do is write stuff for me. I fundamentally believe that written language, spoken language is very inefficient. I am more than happy to have the computer put all the grammar together and build its little sentences, and I will correct as necessary. You're bearing the lead here. It's a fantastic text box. What is a UI but a collection of buttons and text boxes? We covered button. Now we're doing text box, and it's fantastic. Well, it's a text area, so I guess it's a multi-line text box. But yeah, just add autocomplete to your apps. You know, Apple did this, the newest version of Mac. Every text box autocompletes.
Oh, cool.
If it's a native control. But one word at a time, and it's not enough. It's too slow. It's too slow. This thing is using proper GPTs and actually fills in stuff. I love this. This is the best part of the library. You get this library for this feature.
Yeah, it's super duper neat. And we should say how these smart components work is that they're calling out to, well, some of them are calling out to OpenAI services or Azure OpenAI services based on your configuration. So that's sort of how things are happening. And these work both on the server, but there is also WebAssembly versions of these components available as well. But I feel like I don't know what I want them to run on the server. Probably run on the server, probably.
The security model, you'd have to check out a little bit depending on your application, like if you're a bank or something. But if you're not a bank or something, which most of us aren't, I think kind of won't matter if you're running it between server and WebAssembly. It is making a call to the backend. I think we'll talk a little bit more about the backends available, but it's doing web requests. Web requests are available through WASM and the server. So it's really just, you know, all the protections you want to put around keeping keys and throttling and all that kind of stuff, you could control a little bit if you do server side.
Yeah, I think also what's kind of cool is that there are scenarios that you can kind of light things up, kind of give it recommendations. So actually, like on the smart text area, there's actually like this user phrases. So you can kind of give it a list of like characteristics of style. You know what I mean? They have this concept of like user role or user phrase that you might want to return. So you give it some personality. So for example, if you were like the example in the docs is that you would want to create like a Wild West theme. So like, let's say you're a restaurant. So you could give the AI like a user role instead of just being like normal GPT. You could say, hey, like, you know, I'm a staff, like I'm responding or like in the style of this, and it will return a bunch of stuff, and you can give it information about like websites and URLs. So you can give it some data actually, instead of it just trying to figure stuff out automatically, which is kind of neat in general. So kind of interesting, like the customization down the road. So I want every one of my applications to be like sci-fi themed, Star Trek themed. Everything's Star Trek themed.
We're all becoming prompt engineers. You got to give your system prompt. You got to set the tone. You got to tell it in what way to do it. But that's important, especially because a tailored autocomplete is so much better than just a general purpose autocomplete, because when it's trying to decide what you're thinking of, when it's trying to read your mind, it has the whole universe to explore. But if you set the tone, policies, URLs, what else did they mention? Yeah, that's cute tone. Wild West theme. So if you set the Wild Wild West theme as the tone, then obviously it narrows down and give everyone a better experience. If it's a coding app and you're like, enter a class name, you can just prompt it and say, this is only for identifiers and things like that.
Yeah.
Boy, that's going to be expensive, Bill, if you put that in for the class name box for every app.
That's true. Yeah, you'd want to be a little bit more specific we'll get to into that. When you're going to do stuff. Yeah. What's the last one, Frank? What do you got for us?
Oh, it's not the last one, but it's the weird one. It's the one outside the box. Speaking of spending money on things, one of them you don't have to spend money on. The combo box, the lowly combo box. So UIs are text boxes, buttons, and I guess combo boxes also. But this is a smart combo box where it will try to use contextual information from the rest of the web page and everything else to intelligently AI help the user pick from the combo box and fill in, because it is a free form text box also. So combo, drop down, and text box.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of nice because, like, you know, if you're the examples, right, of like, hey, not everyone. Like traditional combo boxes, right? It's sort of, as you're typing it, it'll sort of fill in based on like if it's, you know, matching. If you said you've got pet care and you put in care or pet or PE or something, you know, PC or whatever, you just do that matching. But for example, you could put in like dog, cat, animal, and it would like figure that stuff out for you. So I think that's kind of nice. It's just like an addition, right? It's like, I think at some point in the future, all of our apps are just going to be expected to do this stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Like either it should be baked in at the OS level, or every single web developer should be installing this library. Because I'm a little bit unclear, but I think Combo Box works with just the code itself. You're not actually making OpenAI calls or anything like that. But don't hold me to it. I'm just learning about this library myself.
Yeah, I'm not positive because the last thing is this local CPU thing. This is the thing. What is this thing? I have no idea what this is.
Well, this is a little bit different. This is embeddings for text. So as a general concept in ML, sorry, we have to bring in ML here.
Oh,
I can take a text string. I can run it through a bunch of math, and out of it, I get some numbers. Cool. But most importantly, I can compare those numbers to tell if those text strings are similar to each other or not, semantically and all that kind of stuff. So where is this useful? I tell you, I haven't met a web page yet that doesn't have a tags database and a way to enter tags onto items into that database. So this would be a wonderful place to like consolidate tags if you just have, 200 defined tags throughout your system and someone types in AI computer and it auto-completes to ML. Because it knows those concepts are related and it just picks an existing tag that actually exists. Good stuff. Again, like form entry stuff. But man, what are we all doing but form entry? So really cool. And this one's a little bit different from all the others. This isn't actually a UI component. This is code that you can write. So you have to do the smarts of it. But they're giving you this toolbox of it can semantically compare strings.
That's cool. Yeah, that's pretty neat. I mean, and I think the idea of it being components is we think of components as UI components, but they could be sort of any bit of AI that makes anything a little bit easier to do at the end of the day for your application. So that's kind of neat.
Yep. So this way, and all those combo, well, I guess combo box is covered, but Washington State is always at the very bottom of every combo box. United States of America, always at the bottom of every combo box. My whole life is scrolling to the bottom of combo boxes. So please, every web developer out there, install this library and update all your forms to use it. And now, I will be very grateful.
As a machine learning AI expert, Frank Krueger, how do you feel about this sprinkleization of AI and applications?
This is perfect. I do, as a run things kind of locally person, hope that like web versions of this will catch on, wherein I can download like a 2 gigabyte model and still get all these features. But most people don't want to download a 2 gigabyte file and burn their CPU executing this stuff. So I'm, and the world is APIs. So this is an API backed components, but they're API backed for a reason, for what I just said. It's expensive to run locally on a machine. So super cool. I love the AI sprinkling. I do hope for a future where we have other options too, though. So that's my cynical approach. I always have to give some cynicism.
Yeah. And it looks like this one is using GPT 3.5 Turbo. Can you explain the significance of that? At least that's what the demo is, it looks like, in general. Can you, it does say like you can pick different models here. So you could do GPT-4 or 3.5. Like when you're going down the GPT rabbit hole, there's a bunch of them now. Where does that sort of live? Like what's the current landscape in March 2024? Because I'm assuming 6 months from now, like half of them will be deprecated and then they'll be like GPT-18 or something like that, right?
Oh, I think the terms of service are like 1 year on these models, like, and then they'll support them like for 1 year more than that. So like a 2-year-old model is getting a little bit old.
Wow.
In this day and age, I think it's GPT-3 and GPT-3.5 and then its successor 3.5 that really set the world ablaze with all this large language model stuff, all this AI auto-completion stuff. That's the first model that started working the way that humans could tolerate. There were earlier versions, but this was easily the one that made everyone poke their heads up. It is a fine model for your form filling out. Do it, because you know what else, James? This is the most important thing. It's the cheapest one out there. And it's the cheapest one that cheaper. You want to use.
Yeah, and only getting cheaper.
There's GPT-2 out there. You could find ways to run it, but no, you want to run GPT-3.5 Turbo. It's great. It's fine. Now, if you're doing scientific research or engineering or all the other wonderful endeavors and human activities, things that, let's say, matter, you want to use the best network out there.
Yeah.
Right now, that's GPT-4/GPT-4 Turbo. We talked about it on the podcast before, but 4 Turbo just gives you larger contexts, things like that. Really, it's that simple. For form entry and stuff, 3.5, just fine. For having deep, detailed discussions on philosophy or the sciences, go with the biggest, best model you can.
How far away are we to being able to like just execute very small, tight, purpose-built models on the server directly? Because it's like form data, right? Like, I'm imagining someone could build a model. It's like address GPT, you know, PT, you know, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know how AI works, by the way, but I'm imagining there's like a big file, and that file is like the model. And then you load the model, and then you feed data into the model, and the model spits stuff out. And it's like, cool, I got stuff. And right now, those models are these huge things, blah, 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 the GPTs. And it's like, you got to use the entire power of the internet to parse an address, which is cool, by the way. And it's also natural language too, I should say, because I'm not just parsing an address. You could just do that manually, but it's like natural language parsing. But how far away are we from like creating a model that can maybe do some of that locally, so we don't have to spend any money? I guess you spend money on server costs, right? Because you have to burn through the model locally on your machine.
Yeah, well, the server, ideally, the server cost would just be the cost of putting the model file on the server and the bandwidth it costs to download that file. Right now, we have models that are competitive with my beloved GPT 3.5 Turbo that are, let's call it 3 gigabytes.
Oh, wow.
That number changes from time to time, but let's call it about 3 gigabytes right now. So it's not appropriate for every website to download its own 3 gigabyte AI model and run just on that website. I think that's a little user hostile, though. Maybe if you're an important website, maybe I'd be willing to do it. So I think in the future, we'd have to look into model sharing and caching the model between sites. Maybe it's just a plugin offered in the browser itself, local models versus web-hosted models. Who knows? Yeah. The future is a little bit open there. In terms of fine-tuning, you can definitely fine-tune these puppies to your specific domain and get them to be more aggressive on that domain.
I like that. All right. That's going to wrap because I'm feeling like I might pass out. So, and I have to edit this podcast still. So, because I haven't taught Frank how to teach it after 402 episodes on how to edit it or do anything because I'm worthless.
Don't know a thing.
So that's going to do it for this podcast. If you want to chip into the James Dayquil fun, you can go over to patreon.com/mergeconflict.fm. That's where we take donations and Frank and I split them equally. So he'll get half the Dayquil and I will also get half the Dayquil. We'll go to Costco. We'll get a double pack. It'll be pretty fantastic. And you can find us on Twitter. Now, James Montemagno, I proclaim. You can find us on the YouTubes at MergeConflict.fm, individually on the YouTubes and also on the Twitches, Frank Live Codes. And if you have any questions, write into the show, MergeConflict.fm. But I think it's going to do it for this week before I pass out. So until next time, I'm James Montemagno.
And I'm Frank Krueger. Thanks for watching and listening.
Peace.